Welcome to the Nerd Party.
Scully?
Yes?
Marry me.
I love you and I like you.
I love you and I like you.
I love that woman. I love her more than sharks love blood.
I love you.
You don't.
Hello, I'm Tristan Riddell.
And I'm the girl.
And this is episode 25 of Nerd Nuptial. Thank you so much, everyone, for downloading, subscribing, and streaming, and everything that you do, and interacting with us at contact@thenerdparty.com or me on Twitter @TheInsaneRobin. We're getting your show ideas. We're getting your input and your love. And so we just want to thank you, as always, as we do on the show, because we've been seeing a huge grow in popularity recently. So that means that you guys are
telling your friends, and we appreciate it.
Absolutely. Yeah. Podcasts live and die by word of mouth, and you guys are talking just like we are talking. So thank you so much. And the time has come to talk Star Trek Beyond. We just got back from the theater. This is how we always do it.
Mm-hmm.
If you're a longtime listener, you understand that when we go see a movie, we do not talk about that film while the credits roll, or the walk to the car, or the car drive home. We wait, and it's in the awkward silence usually. And then we set up the mics, and then we record. But before we get into Star Trek Beyond, I would love to talk about some things that happened over the weekend. And that's at Comic-Con.
Yeah. Some cool trailers came out.
That's right. We saw a Justice League trailer and we saw a Wonder Woman trailer. We also saw a few other trailers like Doctor Strange and something like that. But really the two main ones that we want to focus on are the DC ones because we're bigger DC fans.
Right.
Now, the first thing I saw was Justice League. That was all the trailers were sent to me over the weekend by friend of the network and host of Aggressive Negotiations, Matt Rushing. And he is just as stoked as I am. But I wanted to find out, this Justice League trailer, this definitely has a lighter tone than Batman v Superman. I think that's very obvious.
Yes, it definitely feels more like they're going along the lines of Avengers. Maybe still a darker tone than Avengers, mm-hmm. but it seems like they're trying to bring some of that humor, mm-hmm. especially into the trailer.
I think, though, that it was... It definitely was a lighter tone, but it wasn't like slapsticky funny.
No.
Which you can get sometimes from Marvel. And I think that's I think that's the way to go, because DC will never be Marvel and Marvel will never be DC, nor do we want it to be.
Right.
But yeah, you know, the trailer has, you know, Bruce Wayne going through the motions, totally doing the extraordinary the League of Extraordinary Gentlemen thing where, you know, they're trying to find people to join the team. And it's very much the creating the coalition deal. And we see him go from place to place We don't see him meet Cyborg, but we do see him meet the Flash as well as Aquaman.
Mm-hmm.
What did you think about the Flash and Aquaman portrayals?
I think I liked the Flash's portrayal probably a little bit more than Aquaman, because I thought it was just a little fun to see like how nerdy and like awkward he was. I think I'm still on the fence about Aquaman and how that'll be portrayed.
I'm actually, like, when it was announced that they were going to make an Aquaman movie, I was like, okay, how's that going to work? I mean, he gets made fun of so much in the fandom. But, you know, a couple of years ago, they really started to revamp his mm-hmm. character in the comic books. And they gave him the long hair, they gave him the beard, they gave him, like, a hook for a hand and everything like that. And they tried to make him more badass. And so it's interesting, because when Jason Momoa was cast, I was just like, okay, all right. So Wyan makes sense to me.
Yeah.
And he looks badass, and he's actually a good actor. He looks like a brute, but he's surprisingly a good actor. And that shot in the trailer of him just standing at the ocean and then the waves hit him, but he doesn't move.
That was cool.
I thought that was pretty cool.
That was cool. Absolutely.
The Flash scene where Bruce meets Flash, it was very reminiscent of Tony Stark meeting up with Spider-Man in Civil War.
I definitely got a flash of that when I was thinking about it, when I was like, oh yeah, this reminds me a lot of that. But yeah, I mean, let's be honest, when anytime you bring all these characters together, there's going to be some similarities. Right. And because Marvel did it first, you're going to compare them, mm-hmm. even though they're different characters and it's a different universe.
Right.
So I think you just have to kind of like, all right, let's see how they do it.
Yeah.
Awesome.
It's a necessary evil. You know, like there's going to be some parallels, but
yeah,
you know, we both know they're very different properties. And I loved that moment, like towards the final moment of the trailer when Cyborg is speaking to Batman. Says he's like, I didn't think you were real, and Batman says, I'm real when it's useful, or something to that effect. I was like, that's a cool line.
Anytime Batman just has like cool one-liners, you're just all about it.
So I'm excited for it. I
was more excited about the Wonder Woman trailer, though.
Very much so. What did you like about the Wonder Woman trailer?
I think it's cool to see a different world. Mm-hmm. I think it's cool to see her backstory. I think it's cool to see Chris Pine in there. Robin Wright on horseback was pretty epic and awesome. So I'm pretty excited about, I feel like this is going to be a cool female power movie. Mm-hmm. And I like the idea of it being set in a different time.
Yeah, World War One.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I do. I like that.
Now, the story, like some of the stories that they've been drawing off of were actually set in World War II. But they decided to move it to World War One, and I thought that was a very interesting choice because we have a lot of movies, a lot of stories, and a lot of books from the era of World War Two.
True.
But you don't see that very much from World War One.
Not as much.
Not as much. I mean, they're definitely out there.
Right.
But it's just not as prevalent in our culture.
Mm-hmm. And I think maybe making it World War One makes it distant enough that you have some separation that you can imagine some of this stuff happening, whereas World War II, it's a little too, I know it's still a long time ago, but it's mm-hmm. almost too recent in some ways, I think.
I think that's a very good point, because if it was World War II, you know that there would be like some 5-year-old boy
yeah.
running around, and then he sees Wonder Woman, and then all of a sudden he's, you know, he's this 80-year-old man.
Mm-hmm.
And like in we're in present day, and then he remembers who Wonder Woman is, and then we have that scene. But if you set it in World War One, no living soul
right
would be able to remember.
I like her. The separation.
Yes,
definitely.
And also, I think there I'm a bad fan for not remembering Chris Pine's character, but I have a feeling like there's a character in the Wonder Woman comics who is it's kind of like her Lois Lane.
Oh, okay.
And I have a feeling that Chris Pine is going to have a great grandson that looks alarmingly like Chris Pine in the future.
Gotcha.
That's my guess.
Well, there was a moment in the trailer where you definitely got the impression that there was some chemistry going on mm-hmm. between them. Like mm-hmm. it wasn't obvious. Well, it was. I felt like it was pretty obvious.
Oh, yeah.
But yeah.
The trailer yeah. was definitely trying to tell you that.
Oh, yeah.
But there was a lot of cool moments. Mm-hmm. And definitely, they're going towards the feminist avenue. Like they tried to establish that right away. Like they were saying, we recognize that Wonder Woman is a feminist icon, and we're not shying away from that.
Yeah.
Especially with the line where Chris Pine says, "I can't let you do this," and she says, I can't remember the exact line, but she says that you have no say over what I do.
Yeah.
You know, like it's several lines like that.
Very assertive, and yeah. That's awesome. I'm excited too.
The look, the feel. I'm glad they're keeping the lasso. Mm-hmm. And at the very last moments, they kept her theme that was established in Batman v Superman.
Yes, and it's so cool.
Such a cool theme. I almost bought the Batman v Superman soundtrack just for that theme.
Just for that theme. Of course. Well, let's get into Star Trek Beyond.
Let's do it.
I don't want to wait any longer.
I want to tease and reward the audience. It's good radio.
Just a warning, we don't believe in spoiler-free reviews. We are totally spoiler-filled.
Yes.
So if you have not watched the movie, probably wise to wait.
Yes.
Stop it now. Wait until you've seen the movie and then listen again.
Mm-hmm. We talk about this a couple of times.
It's not fun.
It's not fun for us. I don't think it's fun for you guys because we're always dancing around the issues.
Yeah.
And also, we're of the mind, I don't read reviews before I see the movie.
Yeah, we try really hard to just completely black out everything until especially movies that we really care about.
Right.
Yeah, that's the thing. There's certain movies where we're like, okay, we don't mind hearing about how it did or whatever, yeah. And because we're just going to rent it instead of go to theater. But when it comes to a movie that we really care about, like this one, where we try to basically censor ourselves from any other people's opinions.
Like Ghostbusters. You know, like, yeah. I read some reviews on that just because I was curious, but I'm not going to go see it in the theater. I don't really care. I'll rent it.
Yeah.
You know, if I like what I'm hearing and everything like that, but with, like you said, but I had tons of filters muted on my social media, and I didn't go on it for a couple of days just to keep myself pure, because I didn't even want to know if you guys liked it or disliked it, because I wanted to go in fresh.
Right. Exactly.
So that we just gave you like a 60-second warning. Spoilers are coming.
You had time.
All right. So, right off the bat, first impressions.
Well, I think that it was pretty easy to do better than Star Trek Into Darkness. And we had a very interesting perspective going in. Because I asked you before we left the house. I was like, okay, are you cautiously optimistic? Are you excited? Are you kind of like dreading it? What, you know, how are you feeling? And you were like, well, as long as it's better than Star Trek Into Darkness, I'm good.
Mm-hmm.
So I feel like that bar was definitely lower than it was when we went to go see Into Darkness, especially for you.
Yes, very much so. Have I converted you? Like, do you? Because I remember when we first saw Star Trek Into Darkness, you're like, I kind of liked it, but now you're kind of jumping.
Remember when I said that after I saw Wrath of Khan, I completely acknowledged all the flaws in Star Trek Into Darkness, and I was like, well, yeah. After seeing that, I completely agree, and it's because I just was, you know, a very ignorant fan when I saw Star Trek Into Darkness the first time, where I was just like, oh yes, spaceships, yay. Sorry, starships.
Starships. Jeez.
And if you don't know, I am definitely not as big of a fan of Star Trek as Tristan. So, yes.
That's okay. That's okay.
It's okay.
I think that's good. I think it's a good perspective, because a lot of people, a lot of people's praise for the JJ movies have been that they're for the casual fans or the non-fans. But that's also been a criticism of fans saying that it's not for them specifically.
Right.
So I think it's good because I have a fan perspective. You have a non-fan perspective.
Yeah. So I think we have a unique view on this one.
And you guys should go back a couple of episodes and you should hear our retrospective on Star Trek 09 as well as Star Trek Into Darkness. And this will complete the package.
That's right.
So, but you still haven't told me. First impressions, what did you think?
Right after walking out of the movie?
Right out of walking out of the movie.
I liked it. I did. I thought it was enjoyable, and I wouldn't mind seeing it again.
Mm-hmm.
There were certain things that I was kind of like, eh, not so sure about that plot device or something like that here and there. But overall, I thought the new characters, like Jayla, they added, I was all about that. And I overall definitely liked this one a lot. Okay. I think actually I wouldn't mind seeing this one maybe a few more times than the first Star Trek 09. Like, I think it had some interesting parts that I think had more rewatch value.
Oh, are you saying that you like this more than Star Trek 09?
I'm not sure yet.
Okay.
But I would want to see it a few more times to see how I'd feel about that.
But you definitely liked it more than Star Trek Into
Yes,
Darkness.
I did.
Okay.
Yes.
I think I have the same exact feelings as you do.
Really?
I liked it. I thought it was good.
Okay.
Was it great?
No.
Yeah.
It was not clapworthy at the end.
Right.
It was, all right.
It was like, okay.
Good, solid.
Entertained.
Fun.
Solid film.
Fun.
Fun film.
Yeah.
Great adventure.
Yes.
It was a great adventure of the Enterprise crew. Kind of felt like, it felt episodic. It felt like an episode.
Yeah.
But not in a bad way.
Yes, I can definitely understand that. Yeah.
Because like when we talk about the X-Files, and the second movie, I Want to Believe, when we say it just felt like an episode, we're saying that derogatorily.
Yes.
But when we're saying it with Star Trek Beyond, you're saying it in a good way because it wasn't trying to continue what was started in Star Trek Into Darkness.
And I appreciate that.
Right.
Because especially since it got so much hate.
Exactly. And the Earth wasn't in danger.
Yeah. I definitely liked I mean, we had talked about this before, how we had assumed based on the trailer that it was actually reading from the director's perspective that putting all these characters in peril, how is that going to play out and kind of see their characters mm-hmm. come to life in these scenarios. And I liked that. Mm-hmm. I liked that the first act was destroying the ship and, you know, really now we're stranded. Mm-hmm. I really liked that a lot.
I liked it too. I was a lot that pissed a lot of people off because that's people's natural state now. But I when I saw that they were going to do that in the trailer, I was like, cool, bold, interesting.
Mm-hmm.
Where are we going to go from here?
Yeah.
And I think one of the things that detracted from the film for me, even though I enjoyed it, was that I was able to piece the entire story together from the trailers.
Yes, actually, I felt that way too.
Oh, every single moment, there was really no surprises to me.
I'm trying to think about a surprise to me, which maybe it shouldn't have been, was when they captured all of the crew. Like, I thought that either everyone was going to die based on the trailer, but I didn't realize that everyone was going to be captured by Krull.
Oh, well, I mean, they showed that in the trailer. Like, they were rounding up the people.
I guess they did. Yeah. But I guess I just wasn't sure.
Yeah. I think...
Or maybe you didn't watch it as closely as you did.
The only thing that they didn't reveal in the trailer that was a surprise in the movie was Krull actually being human and a former captain of the USS Franklin, even though I pieced that together by the second act.
Was it when he used like the people to kind of like start to transform?
That's when it confirmed it for me.
Okay.
But beforehand, I was confused because I kept trying to question. I was like, what is this guy's motivation?
Mm-hmm.
I was actually getting frustrated because I was like, what is this bad guy's motivation? Why is he doing what he's doing?
And that was not clear.
No. That wasn't
it. It wasn't 100% clear, even at the end.
Even at the end, it was vaguely referenced towards the end, where you're like, okay, it's a revenge scheme, because he's angry at the Federation for not rescuing him, and then that cultivated into there shouldn't be a Federation. We should just be militaristic, which is very much what Star Trek Into Darkness was about, like with the Admiral.
Yeah, and also I felt like the whole trope of we're a team mm-hmm. was played quite a bit throughout the entire thing, especially whenever there was a conversation with Krull.
Yeah.
It was all like, no, you guys are, unity, can't be, you unity, can't have yeah. unity. You know, it was just a little bit overplayed in my opinion.
I think so too. And that's when I was searching for it, I said, I was like, why does this guy hate the Federation? Oh, okay. Well, if it's been 100 years, maybe he has some sort of connection to the Franklin.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like maybe he, you know, intermarried with somebody with the Franklin, or maybe, you know, something happened.
Something wronged in some way.
Yeah.
Yeah.
He has to have some sort of connection with the Franklin. And then when they tortured those people.
Yeah, that was messed up.
That was a very messed up scene. And then he zapped them and he started to change. I was like, oh, okay. He was the captain of the Franklin.
Yeah. Yeah. I kind of got that too. Yeah, it was interesting. So, okay, because I'm an ignorant fan of Star Trek, tell me when we first saw the trailer of Star Trek Beyond and we eventually got to see the ship
mm-hmm.
of the Franklin.
Right.
Did you think it was a different ship or did you know it was that ship?
It was I knew we've never seen the Franklin before. We've never seen specifically the Franklin before.
Okay.
And it was the thing is it was very reminiscent of a Warp 5 ship design, which is the ship that we saw Scott Bakula's ship.
Okay.
That's a Warp 5 ship.
Okay.
And so that was before the Federation even existed. And that took place during Enterprise era, Star Trek Enterprise era, with Scott Bakula and whatnot. Now, Scotty said that the Franklin was a Warp 4 ship. And that means that it was built before the NX Enterprise, which was a Warp 5 ship. But they said that the Franklin and also Idris Elba's character was a part of the Federation. Federation didn't exist.
So that doesn't work.
And no, but the thing is, though, is I think there might be ways around it where it could be where they gave him a Warp 4 ship, But later. Okay. Like, I'm thinking maybe that's how,
like,
it went down.
Like a recommissioned type. Okay.
Yeah, that's what I'm thinking. Is that because his character references the Zindi War and the Romulan War. The Zindi War was before the Federation. The Romulan War was after the Federation was founded.
Okay.
That means if he was alive for both of those, and the Franklin crashed after the Romulan War, then that means that it's a Warp 4 ship, but it was either commissioned after or recommissioned after Federation started. So
okay,
that timeline works, but I could understand why a few fans would be like, whoa, whoa,
sure.
Wait a second.
Sure.
That doesn't work. Why do they have the Delta Shield if it's before Enterprise? But actually, at the last episode of Enterprise, they have the beginnings of a Delta Shield.
Okay.
So it does make sense.
Okay. So it works.
It works.
Okay. I wasn't sure because I didn't want to ask you, obviously, during the movie. But I was curious because I knew that you possibly thought maybe it was Bacula's ship or...
No.
No, you did not? Okay.
No, I did not think it was Bacula's ship.
You just thought it was about that era.
Yes.
Okay,
I thought it was around that era, and it was around that era.
Okay.
Or a little bit after.
Okay.
I was kind of hoping that before I found out the name of the ship, I was hoping it was the Columbia, which is a ship that was built just a few years after the NX Enterprise, and it was lost.
Oh, well, that would have been cool.
Yeah.
Kind of to play into the lore of that.
I thought that would have been cool, but yeah.
Yeah. You know, they didn't do that.
They didn't do that. So it's okay. But yeah, so it does, it after, like, my gut reaction when they said Warp 4, I was like, whoa, they're saying Federation, they're saying Warp 4, it doesn't make sense. Come on, Simon Pegg, I know you know this stuff. But yeah, then I started thinking about it more. And I was like, okay. And then he mentioned that he was a Mako, which is also a throwback to Scott Bakula's Enterprise, because they had a team of, their military was the Makos. Like, they were kind of like hired Marines.
Okay.
And so that was another tie. So we had three ties. We had the Mako tie, the Zindi tie, and the Romulan War tie. All
so there
Bacula's
you go,
era.
Appeasing your fans.
Absolutely.
Gotcha.
Yeah.
Gotcha. So as a fan, did you feel like, okay, they kind of did some of that fan fulfillment that you're like good, but still appeasing the masses who are not as into Star Trek?
100%. Because when he mentions the Zindi War and the Romulan War, did that matter to you?
Nope.
Exactly.
Yep.
So it didn't detract from
anything.
I
knew what Romulans were.
Yeah.
But I didn't know what Zindis were.
But it didn't detract from anything. You're just like, oh, I guess that was just like some random war that happened.
Right.
And you're right, it was.
Right.
But to me, I'm like, hee hee. You know? So,
exactly. And that's what you want.
Yes.
You want that kind of reference that you drop it and super fans are super excited about it. And But it doesn't detract or a fan being like, what's that? Do I need to know the history of that war?
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
And if you're a young fan... And by young, I don't mean age, but just like a recent fan.
Mm-hmm.
You might be thinking, well, maybe I should go back and watch Enterprise. Like, you search Zindi on Google, and then all this stuff comes up, and you're
sure.
Like, oh, cool.
You can, like, learn more about it.
Yeah, there was like all of season 3 of Enterprise was one long story about the Zindi War.
Okay.
And that never happened before on Star Trek. And
cool.
That was very interesting. But okay, so yes, I love the stuff with the Franklin.
Mm-hmm.
I thought. I wasn't quite sure. Let me just focus on positives.
Okay.
The visuals.
Great. Other than the CGI at the beginning.
Oh my god. Okay, we'll get back to that.
Okay.
We will get
All
back
right,
to that.
Sorry.
I promise you, we will
okay,
get back
sorry.
To that. But yes, the visuals were the best that I've ever seen.
It was awesome. It was actually beautiful.
It was beautiful. Better than 09, better than Into Darkness. Could be one of the most beautiful Star Trek films shot. You know, like, I know that probably some people are going to be angry with me, but I think it was the most visually interesting.
Yes.
There might be some more beautiful, like, the motion picture, some people, the first Star Trek might, some people might argue that was much more beautiful in the much more traditional sense of the word, and I agree. And First Contact is very visually interesting, but, like, Star Trek Beyond is very visual, and that's the thing, you got a director who is a very visual director.
Yeah, it's true. It's very true.
Very action-oriented, very pretty.
Mm-hmm.
And some people say that as negatives for Snyder, like Zack Snyder.
Mm-hmm.
But I feel like Justin Lin knows how to work with an ensemble. And I think that's another positive, apart from the visuals, is that I feel like every single character, main character, got their moment in the sun.
I felt that way too. I definitely felt that way. That's hard to do. And I also thought that the pairings that they, you know, when people broke off, I thought it was interesting how they paired certain people off. Like, you know, Chekhov was with Kirk and, you know, Bones and Scotty. So Bones and
Spock.
Spock. And it was just interesting to see the characters interact, maybe not in the groupings that they typically would be with. Mm-hmm. You know, I was surprised by some of them, but it made an interesting story. And it was interesting when, like, they found each other in different ways. I was like, oh, that's interesting. It's mm-hmm. not your, you know, we didn't all just meet up again automatically, right. Which was nice.
Yes. Yeah, I completely agree. I feel like everybody had something important to do.
Yes.
No one was just in the background or just getting lip service or anything like that.
I loved it when Sulu took over the ship.
Yeah.
I loved that moment.
It's, like we got a little bit of that in Into Our Darkness. And I think that's definitely a throwback where we find out, like you saw Star Trek Undiscovered Country,
mm-hmm.
where we find out that he's the captain of the Excelsior. So you know that he has that power within him.
Right.
To command. And so, yes, it was.
But it was just nice to see that character, like you said, every character had a moment in the sun,
mm-hmm.
and it was just interesting and fun to see that. Or like when Uhura like puts herself in danger to save Kirk, like that was cool. And you know how she was definitely more the diplomat in that scenario.
Yeah,
it was interesting.
Yeah, I think it was great ensemble, well used. I thought the action was well paced.
Yeah.
I can't really think of a slow moment. Like I can't think of a moment where I was like, okay, let's go, let's move on. I mean, the second act is naturally slower in every film usually, but
it was interesting, and they were doing something the entire time, mm-hmm. so I didn't feel that either.
Yeah. I loved that. I loved that it was very well paced. Once we got past the beginning. And I'm itching to talk about it. Okay,
go ahead.
All right, so we'll get the opening.
What was with that?
I don't know. I mean, it was the CGI characters were really done poorly.
Yeah.
It looked cartoony.
And every time we bring up something like that, people are like, no, that was awesome. I'm like, what are you seeing that we're not seeing?
Yeah. Because that's the thing.
They were like, terrible.
For the most part, the CGI was really good. There was a few points here and there.
Yeah, especially sometimes, like at the end, there was like an alien. I was like, that's so. It sticks out. Like, especially when you have people in masks next to you, mm-hmm. or like makeup, it's almost like go all the way one way or don't.
Yeah, it doesn't blend well.
It doesn't.
That's the thing, is that they did not blend CGI and live action very well. I mean, there was a few times like when they beamed Jayla and Kirk on the motorcycle. That was clearly a CGI motorcycle.
Yes.
And it moved oddly.
Yes.
At the beginning.
I did notice that.
But after that, it was cool. Like when they mm-hmm. were, when it was multiple Kirks just driving around.
Yeah.
Very cool. Very well done. And when Kirk and Krall were floating around, there was a few times when it was clearly CGI people and not green screen Idris Elba and Chris Pine. And no movie's perfect.
No.
No CGI is perfect. All I'm saying is that it took us out of it. And especially the opening scene. I mean, right, the first thing you see.
That bothered me. I was like, when you see that, it immediately makes you think, uh-oh, is this going to be the rest of the movie, something mm-hmm. like this? Because it doesn't compute. You're like, oh dear, this is going to be the rest of the film, this type of CGI.
Yeah.
I mean, yeah, it was a funny moment where like they're super tiny or whatever, but I mean, I understand it was to establish that device,
mm-hmm.
but do it better.
Yeah, that's the thing, is that even regardless of CGI, let's give it a pass.
Okay.
Let's give it a pass on CGI. I didn't like the scene. It was goofy.
Yeah, it did feel over the top goofy to start with.
And I know that there are times in the original series where they get goofy, they get cheesy.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that's part of its charm.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't, and I'm fine with that, but don't start with it.
Mm-hmm.
Don't start with cornball goofiness, because I started thinking about this, you know, like they're super angry. They roll around and then they're all tiny. Ha ha. And then they start attacking him, and it's, you know, like he's ripping it off. We know that he's in no real danger or anything
right.
like that. What I would have liked to have seen, because what they do is they switch tones immediately. It's like goofy cheeseball and then gear shift,
mm-hmm.
and it's Kirk going,
him questioning his identity.
What am I doing out here? I'm getting lost in the blackness of space.
You know, why not start with a scene where they're non-CGI people, but they're clearly alien? Have them be stodgy and regal. And he walks in, he says, he's like, this is a diplomatic gesture. And just have them be, have them reject it completely, right. like they did, but just in a very much more intimidating tone.
Right.
Not aggressive or violent, but just dismissive.
But clearly he messed up on this attempt to show some goodwill.
Yeah. Like, start the tone low where we see Kirk reject it. Like, we see him rejected from a diplomacy. Mm-hmm. And so it makes him question, am I doing the right thing? Should I still be out here? And instead, we start with a joke and then, should I still be out here? I'm getting bored.
Yeah. And boredom, you, like, see, you know, the crew kind of, you know, going through the paces of of life on a ship. And yeah, I completely agree with you with that one.
And that's the thing, though, is that, like, that's really my main complaint.
Really?
Yeah. Was the opening.
The only other part where it won me over, okay, was when they started playing music to misdirect the B group.
That won you over? You like that?
Okay,
or you
so at first,
that?
I rolled my eyes.
Uh-huh.
I was like, really? We're going to save the day with the music? I was just like, I just literally had an eye roll moment.
Mm-hmm.
But they did it in a cute way where by the time they actually played the music, they did it in such a fun, almost music video kind of fun way that I was like, okay, I'm going to give it a pass and it's fun and I'm just going to like enjoy the ride. So I had to kind of like talk myself into it, but it didn't take very much.
Yeah.
But the whole concept, I was like, this doesn't feel very Star Trek to me. This feels very like... The people next to me who are, like, laughing hysterically are enjoying it. Uh-huh. But I wondered how you took that, because I was just like, there needs to be more science here than music.
It's funny that you say that.
Uh-oh. Okay.
Because I thought that was very Star Trek.
Really?
Yes.
Okay.
Here's why.
Okay.
Here's why. Maybe not the music. No, okay. You're absolutely right.
But like, frequencies.
Yes.
Okay.
Like playing the music and using that to destroy vessels.
Yes.
No, that's not very Star Trek. That's not Star Trek at all. But the conversation leading up to that, like if this was any other movie, if this was any other science fiction movie, I would have rolled my eyes going, oh my God, really? Like you're just going to solve the problem that quickly? You're using analogies. Mm-hmm. You're using metaphors. Come on. Within Star Trek, that is used almost every single episode. It's
really?
Just like, it's like, well, what are we going to do? It's like, well, we're going to shoot some proton beams into the entity. We're going to inflame the chronotons. And then that way, you know, they're like, okay, English, please. It's like putting too much air into a balloon. You know, like, and everybody's talking super, super fast using similes and metaphors and everything like that. And then there's this like, oh my God, it's so simple. You know, of course, they'll never see it coming.
Gotcha.
That's very Star Trek.
Okay.
And I think that was done on purpose. But then that was tied into something that was very much fan service for the non-fan, where they're like, oh my God, they're saving the day with Beastie Boys.
Yeah. And I thought it was fun. That was the music that they used in the trailer. So I thought that was, again, some fan service there, where it was like, it wasn't just a random song. It was a song we'd heard before, and then it kind of meant something more.
I would have liked it if that wasn't played in the trailer.
Really?
Because that's played in Star Trek 09.
Oh.
Remember, like when Kirk is a boy, a young boy,
driving
the car.
I totally forgot that.
He's playing Sabotage by the Beastie Boys.
I completely forgot that.
And that's why Kirk has a smirk on his face and he goes, that's a good choice.
Okay.
But the thing is, it was like that surprise was ruined for me because of the trailer. Because when Jilly was playing music and it was not Beastie Boys, it was something else. It was Fight the Power. I was like, oh, okay. I was like, we're gonna hear Sabotage again, probably. And then later on when they said, they're like, okay, we're going to kill the aliens with music, they're like, oh, let me find a selection.
You knew it was going to be that.
You
okay.
knew. I knew exactly. I was like, okay. Oh, it's going to be Sabotage.
Yeah.
But I was still grinning like an idiot from ear to ear while it was going on.
Yeah, it was pretty. And again, visually, it was awesome.
Visually amazing.
Awesome, yeah.
Very visually
stunning
movie.
I think that J-Lo's outfit is freaking sexy and awesome.
you know, I didn't even really pay attention to her.
Oh
outfit.
My gosh, it was so cool.
I was so enamored by her makeup and her hair.
Oh, I loved all of it.
Yeah.
Yeah, all of it.
I thought she was a great character and the accent was cool.
It was so cool.
Yeah.
Yeah, I thought she was awesome.
So.
And love that there was no love interest.
Yes.
Thank you. She was just a kick-ass girl.
I think
awesome.
That's why they paired her with Scotty, because you knew that there wasn't going right. to be any.
And if there was, we'd just be like throwing our hands in the air and be like, really?
Really? But it was.
Then it would be really Simon Pegg just like writing in this hot girl to make out with.
There was a few moments where I was like, huh, Scotty's in this a lot.
Yeah, but you know what? He was in it. He's always been in it a lot.
It's true. He was in.
I thought the same thing, but. He was in it probably equal that he was in all the other ones.
I think you're right. My knee jerk was like, okay, Simon.
But I think it's just because you knew that he wrote it.
You're right. You're right.
So
you're right.
I was able to excuse that.
But I did like that they kind of made Chekhov the horn dog.
Yes.
Because he, at the beginning of the movie, he's kicked out of some girl's quarters. And then when he meets Jayla, he's clearly checking her out.
Yes. I loved that. And at the end, then he was like with another girl. Mm-hmm. That was very funny.
He likes the alien women.
Yeah, That's right. I thought it was fun.
And that's also a very Star Trek thing is Chekhov saying that everything was invented by a Russian.
Oh, like, okay, gotcha.
That's a throwback. Yeah,
that's nice.
Also,
that's nice.
Kirk saying to absent friends,
right? And you know,
you remember? Yeah, that
I remember that.
Spock,
that whole scene. You know, I definitely remember that. Mm-hmm. That I felt that moment.
I really, really wanted them to be on the bridge of the new Enterprise, and I wanted Kirk to say, "Let's see what she's got," and then that's the end of the movie because we've heard that before. But what did you think? Like, okay, that was another thing.
Okay.
That was another thing because of the trailer. We didn't see them in casual garb at the beginning. They were on the Yorktown.
Yes.
In casual garb in the trailer. And, you know, Bone says, you really want to go back out there.
You knew.
Yeah, you knew.
But it was at the end of the movie.
Yeah, I was like, as soon as I saw the trailer, I was like, oh, that's the end of the movie. The Enterprise is destroyed, and what they're looking at is the Enterprise A.
Yeah.
Okay, and of course, and that's what happened, and
right.
That was confirmed as soon as the Admiral said, "Well, actually, the most advanced starship is here, but it's not finished yet." I'm like, "Oh, well, she's talking about the Enterprise A."
You yeah, know? Yeah.
They're just gonna change the name for the crew because they need a new ship.
Exactly.
Yeah. So it's not very yeah. So that's the thing. Like, I still enjoyed it.
Oh, yeah.
But it's funny because when I saw the trailers, I didn't think they actually gave away that much, but they
no,
really did.
No, they really did. They did.
They really
quite a
did.
Bit.
Yeah.
Yeah. What did you think about the whole, that doomsday device trope?
It was a MacGuffin.
Yeah, I kind of felt that way too. And I also felt like a lot of those problems got solved very quickly.
Mm-hmm.
So, like, the music took care of that. Okay, mm-hmm. We still got three more. Okay, we can stop them with the spaceship. Awesome, we did that. And then, oh, he's still out there. Okay, now we've got to stop, you know, and then I knew as soon as you saw, like, when he was talking, like, you cut to Bones in the spaceship still, like, he clearly didn't land. Mm-hmm. I was like, I knew immediately how he's going to be saved.
He's going to grab Kirk.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So... I don't know. That was a little too predictable.
It was a very predictable Star Trek.
It was.
But still entertaining.
Yeah, it was fun.
Yeah.
It was very fun.
I think that's why I'm saying it was good, not great.
Yes.
It did not wow me, but I was very entertained.
Yes. And I think there's a lot of rewatch value there. Like,
absolutely.
I would definitely watch it several more times and enjoy it, and it'll be in our rotation when we rewatch, you know, that whole series. But yeah, there was just certain things that you're like, this could be better. This is too predictable. Mm-hmm. But overall, I really liked, you know, when it comes down to character, I thought that they did a really good job with all of the characters.
Yeah. And that's good. I mean, that's what you want to say about mm-hmm. a movie. I mean, like, you don't want to just say, oh, the visuals were great. Well, what about the script? What about the characters? What about this? What about the music? And so that's good because so many people have complained that the characters are completely secondary in this universe.
Mm.
But, you know, when you have a sci-fi action film, sometimes characters do have to be.
Sometimes.
Sometimes. Mm-hmm. Now, I'm not saying always, obviously. But when you have a TV series, yeah, you can focus on character more. That's the beauty of TV.
Yes.
And with films, you have bigger set pieces, bigger explosions. And so sometimes characters are secondary. But with this, characters were well-serviced, well-designed, and well-executed.
Yeah, good ensemble moments, too.
Quinto looks different. He's looking older.
He's looking older?
Yeah.
I didn't really notice too much.
I think his body's changing, and he's looking a little bit older. What did you think about the Ambassador Spock stuff? Did you think it needed to be addressed? Do you think they just needed to leave it alone? Were you happy about it?
I think it was nice. I think it was a nice throwback, and I also thought it was interesting of Spock's motivation that, okay, maybe I should, be with my people, help them. So I thought that was interesting. I thought it was a nice, and it was a nice way to kind of, in memoriam to him, and I thought that was nice.
I did, yeah. I thought it was good too. I thought because of motivation, like it allowed him to have some internal conflict.
Yes.
About motivation, where should I stay in Starfleet? Should I not?
Right.
And it was not linked, but it was similar to Kirk's conversation of should I, should I not be a captain anymore? Should I go to Vice Admiralty? Admiralty or whatever. And so, yeah, those motivations were interesting. And it's actually funny that they brought up making Vulcan babies because Charlene Schmidt and I on my Voyager podcast To the Journey on the Trek FM network, we actually talked about that. We were talking about Voyager set in the JJ verse and the Kelvin timeline and everything like that. Actually, oh yeah, it's not called the JJ verse anymore. It's called the Kelvin timeline. Yeah, the Kelvin timeline. And we were thinking about how that would be a nice out of the relationship, is because Spock would probably not want to mate with Uhura because he needs to progress his species bloodline as much as possible. And we thought that would make an interesting story about and how that friction would be created between Spock and Uhura. And so it's really funny that that was actually a plot point in one of the movies. And speaking of Kelvin, like they didn't call them escape pods. Did you notice that?
What did they call them?
They called them Kelvin pods.
Oh.
So which is another throwback.
Throwback to the
Kelvin in the first one, because they didn't have any escape pods.
That's right.
They use shuttles. That's all that they used.
Yes.
So, like after that catastrophe, after the destruction of Kelvin, they're just like, we got to think of something.
Something different.
Yeah.
Yeah. I also kind of thought it was interesting to have a different dynamic between Uhura and Spock, but it wasn't such like a relationship that had so much friction that it was that trope of like, oh, you dumped me, I'm going to be angry with you. Mm-hmm. It was just kind of like, all right, enough time had passed that it was just kind of like, okay, apparently you got to do what your thing and I have to do my thing. Are you sure you don't want your necklace back?
Yeah.
I felt like it was like they clearly cared about each other, but it was for a greater purpose that they possibly wouldn't be together.
And when they were getting fired upon and when he hurt his side and everything like that, they didn't talk about their relationship. They didn't.
Yes. Oh my gosh. Yes. Thank you. Oh my gosh. That was one of the worst parts of Into Darkness.
Oh my gosh.
I couldn't believe that.
Yeah. So that was done very well.
Yes.
I thought that was done very well because they recognized the relationship. They recognized that it might be over.
Mm-hmm.
It might not be over. But it kind of gave some ambiguity, and that's fine. That's okay.
I felt like women were served a lot better. As a woman, I felt like women were served a lot better in this interpretation of Star Trek than they were in the others, especially Into Darkness, where, they were just there for, to be in their underwear, apparently.
Yeah.
It was just nice not to see – you saw them step up into leadership roles. I felt like Uhura had a really good role in that, of talking to the enemy.
Mm-hmm.
And I thought Jayla obviously was an intricate part of that. So, and it was nice not to they didn't really have to save Uhura.
Yeah.
She ended up being just fine by herself.
Yeah. And the woman at the beginning who didn't speak English turned out had a much more fleshed out character.
Yes. Yeah.
Had much more dimensions.
Mm-hmm.
And the ensign who was hiding the device in her head.
Yes.
That was, something special, that she wasn't just some random.
She caved pretty quickly.
Yeah. Well, she saved Sulu's life.
That's true. That's true.
but sacrifice yourself.
Exactly.
So there was definite purpose to these female characters, and it was I think that was a very conscious effort. I feel like on Simon
Pegg. I'm sure they got some hate.
Oh yeah.
Over that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I feel like Justin Lin, Simon Pegg, and I'm forgetting the other writer's name. I apologize if he's listening. but I'm sure that was done. That felt very deliberate,
mm-hmm.
but appreciated.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
It was time.
And the vice admiral was a woman,
mm-hmm.
and a Middle Eastern woman.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it works. It's good. But I think even the detractors, like the people who don't want to see that stuff, I don't even think they can complain because nothing was in your face.
No.
You know, like quote unquote in your face.
No.
So yeah,
it was just.
Like even
Sulu, be respectful of the characters.
Even Sulu being gay, it was just like, oh, okay, and then we moved on.
Yeah, I know there was a big controversy over that, but it
doesn't matter.
It doesn't matter.
It doesn't matter.
I mean, I felt like it gave us a little bit more connection to the Yorktown experience.
Yes.
When you saw his husband,
or his
partner in the daughter, I thought that was great.
Absolutely, you're right. You're 100%.
It made a
white.
Connection. We cared more about Yorktown because of that relationship.
Mm-hmm. But yes.
But we didn't need to see everyone else have a family member in Yorktown. All we needed was Sulu, and I cared.
Yeah, and so it wasn't.
So it was achieved.
It wasn't done just to say, "Hey, we have a gay character now."
Nope.
It was done to connect you to Yorktown. Absolutely,
that
100%.
Was the plot device. And it was done well.
It was done
really well.
Absolutely. All right. So, on a rating out of 5 stars, what do you give this movie?
3.5.
I was going around there. I was going 3.54 even.
Okay.
You know, like I was going around. I feel like I think I'd lean more towards you saying 3.5, and I feel like if I watch it again,
maybe
I'll like
up
it more.
Into a 4.
I think so because everything was so. Not ruined, but because there was no surprises because of the trailers.
Yeah.
Like, I even liked Into Darkness more
after I
watched it again. It didn't make it a better movie.
See, I liked it less after I saw Wrath of Khan. That's beside the point.
But yeah, so I think I'm going to put a 3.5 and with the possibility of it going up.
Okay.
I still think I like Star Trek 09 better.
Okay.
But that might change.
Yeah.
That might change. I'm open to it changing. I'd love to see it again. I don't think I'll see it in theaters again, but we'll definitely pre-order that bad boy. And
we'll come on,
and
of
have
course.
That delivered, yeah.
Yeah. And in 2 weeks, we get to see Suicide Squad.
That's right. That's right.
Yeah.
So you guys have that to look forward to. And I'll be flying home from Vegas.
That's
we'll
right.
watch Suicide Squad. We'll record. And then, boom, you guys will hear about it. And next week is going to be a surprise. So
yes.
You'll have to tune in between times. Well, that's our show. We love that you guys listened, and we want to hear what you thought about Star Trek Beyond.
Absolutely.
What you can do is you can go to our Facebook page at facebook.com/thenerdparty, or you can email us at contact@thenerdparty. You can find me on Twitter @TheInsaneRobin. What was your rating? What did you like about it? And also, if you have any show suggestions, you can do that too. You can email us or talk to us that way. We want to know what you guys want us to talk about. And also, we would love a rating in iTunes.
Yes, please.
It pleases us immensely. Whenever we get a new review, we get big smiles on our faces, and it's a way to help the show, and it costs you nothing. And it's just a great way for us to get better advertisements in iTunes. And if you give us a 5-star rating, we will mention you on the podcast like so many other people before you. And one other thing that we need to talk about is our sponsor, our partner, LootCrate.com. If you go to LootCrate.com/NerdParty and enter in the code NerdParty, you'll save some money off of this subscription geek box service. It's a great service. You'll get Pop Funkos, T-shirts, action figures, all licensed thoroughly through the companies that they're associated with. And you'll get about like $40, $45 worth of merchandise for $20. And if you go to lootcrate.com/thenerdparty, enter in code NERDPARTY, you'll get even more money off of that.
I love you.
I know.
My dad joined Starfleet because he believed in it. I joined on a dare.
You joined to see if you could live up to him. Spent all his time trying to be your dad. And now you're wondering what it means to be you.
We were overwhelmed by something. Something we've never seen before. I know this isn't the last of my crew. But this is my last report as the captain of the Starship Enterprise. I'm bracing for the pain and I am.